All right. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome again to a new episode of the GovCon Coffee and Issues podcast. I'm joined here today by my co-host, Mr. Michael Lejeune. Thanks for joining us, Michael.
Hey, once good to again, be here as always, man.
I'm glad you came back this year.
Yeah.
New year, new you.
Yeah, this is like my first live thing since COVID stuff. So
yeah, made it through the sickness and everything.
Yep. So survived.
Awesome. I'm glad we actually pushed this out a little bit. Usually we do these on the first of every month on every Wednesday, but this one got pushed out a little bit so it could give you time to recuperate. Yeah. I kind of predicted that COVID was coming to you since you came to visit me here in Florida.
Yeah. So yeah, we all had it and everybody, you know, everybody I know has been sick. So
yeah,
it's kind of sucked, but. It's all
awesome.
Good.
Well, that's not awesome, but it's awesome that you're better and that you're here with us today.
It's awesome that it's out of the way. So that's good.
So,
it's over, so.
Well, today on this episode, Michael, we're going to talk about how do you win your first government contract? You know, it's interesting because I had an email from a gentleman who asked me, and even though we have 150 classes on our Govology.com platform on the subject of government contracting, I was just like, that's a hard question to answer without any context behind it. And so I sent him back an email and I said, well, there's one answer actually with two words that you can almost answer every GovCon question with, and that's it depends, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So, and it really does depend on a lot of factors. What I thought that we could do here today is we can talk about some of those factors on why it depends and why if you're reaching out to ask how to get your first government contract, either from us or from any of the other experts or PTAC folks out there, it's important to give some context as much as you can, because if we don't know what you do or how long you've been in business or some of these other things, it's going to be hard for us to help you answer that question for yourself. So,
right.
Michael, I've got a few notes here and bullets, but what are some of those factors where you would need to know if somebody was calling you and saying, how do I win my first government contract?
Yeah. There's actually two questions in one. So I've never been asked, how do I win my first government contract, without also being asked, so how long do you think this is going to take? Like, how long is it going to take for me to win that first contract? You know, is it going to be 2 months? Is it going to be 6 years? Like, how long does it really take? And so I usually answer both of those questions with more questions, because right, when somebody comes and says, well, how do I win a contract? First question is always, well, what do you sell? Because I have people that come to me all the time and say stuff like, hey, we sell services, you know, IT, and we help build networks, we perform project management services. And a company like that is going to be able to ease into the market fairly quickly. But then I had a client the other day that sells vegetables. Like, that was it. They're like, yeah, we sell fruits and vegetables, and we want to figure out how to sell that to the government. And I'm like, I don't even know where to start with that, right?
Right.
And we had somebody that wanted to sell one time these little meal cubes. And a lot of times food is a really weird one when you're trying to sell to the government. But they're like, hey, this one meal cube will replace the whole MRE. And I'm like, well, you're trying to sell something that the government doesn't buy today, and you're trying to get them to rethink their whole strategy. It's going to take a while. And I don't know how we're going to get your first contract. So like, anytime somebody asks, how do I win my first contract, or how long is it going to take? We start digging into these questions. And the top one is, well, who buys what you sell? You know, do they know you? You know, oh, how do they buy what you sell? Do you have any past performance selling this, or is this your first time in business? You know, do you have some teaming partners? Do you know anyone in the market? Do you have, you know, certifications and statuses and those kind of things? Because, you know, and some people will say, well, what does that have to do with winning my first contract? Well, when you start to peel it back, the government has a process in which they buy. And they have not only processes, but they have preferred vehicles. They have preferred statuses at different agencies. Like, you'll go to one agency and you'll see that they're doing 40% of a certain NAICS code in WOSB. But then you go to their sister agency and they're doing 40% of that NAICS code in STVOSB. Like, it's a total different strategy to sell to them. So if you don't have the right status, you're going to need a partner if that's the client you want to sell to. And so when somebody says, well, how do I win my first contract there? It's like, well, let's figure out the answers to these questions so that we can develop a strategy, because you can't just in my opinion, I think you just can't brute force your way in and it work. Like, yeah. You can win some contracts with just the brute force. I'm going to reply to RFPs and that's going to make it work. But it's like, maybe you're going to win 10% of the contracts you should win without a strategy. And so I think the strategy is the biggest part. And a lot of these questions help us get there.
Yeah. And that's why it's so hard to just basically answer that question in general sense. Like, we can't really do a podcast that is applicable to everyone on, like, how do you get your first contract? Everything that you said is spot on the nail. One of some of the other things that I've observed too is that there's the standard pathway that you might hear. And we'll talk about, like, maybe some of the options that people take to kind of find their first contract. One of them is like getting registered at SAM, and then you're there and then you're looking. But as a buyer myself in the government, I know that there was a good number of contractors, especially at the end of the year when we're trying to, you know, spend dollars on whatever else was in need. And sometimes we're trying to buy stuff from people that are not even registered on SAM yet because mm-hmm. we wanted what they had. So that's the other question is, like, really, how much do they want what you have to offer? And I know that there's some cases where you'll see, like, for example, somebody was working inside of the government, and then basically they will leave the government and then come back the next week as a consultant. So their first contract was kind of already in hand before they even really registered in SAM. So you have everything from those types of deals to people that register at SAM. They do all the right things. They're trying to look around and find these opportunities, but sometimes it just takes them a while. And sometimes they need to understand exactly how the government buys what they sell, where that demand stream is. And so that's a lot to think about. Let's just take a few examples here, because I also had an email from another person this week that is a singer, and she's looking for a singing contract, you know, and it's like, how do you get your first contract as it relates to a person who does singing? Well, probably you can go and register at SAM, but you're probably not going to see that solicitation for singing published on SAM, right? The Contracting Opportunities Portal, because they're not required to publish their opportunities until they hit about 25K. And a lot of maybe your singing contract price for a gig might be $5,000, right? In that scenario, it's really about, hey, do you have a relationship with somebody at an agency or at a base that they hire singers in? And who does that? And what do they do it for? And so that could be one option, is like, that would be that person's path to get their first contract. And they could probably even run it under the micro purchase thresholds on the P card. Yeah. They may not even have to get registered. When I was actually working at the VA, they started making everybody get registered, even if they were under the micro purchase threshold. And we had this lady that just, all she did was play piano for the veterans in the hospital. And they made her get registered for SAM for a $600 kind of gig, you know. So sometimes some agencies might require that, but that's kind of why the micro purchase thresholds and the P card program was put out there, so they could put that purchasing power in the hands of their departments. And if they need to go to Office Depot and buy something, they could just go, or if they know that, hey, Michael, you sing or chop wood or whatever you do, right, I could just hire you. You could come and do it, right? So it's an easy transaction. So sometimes there's complexity to those transactions as well.
Here's the deal. Does the government buy all your stuff? So like in the singer example, could they buy that for, like, maybe there's a ball or some sort of event, right, or a retirement thing? But here's the deal. Can you consistently make a business out of that? I think too many people are overly optimistic. They're like, well, I know the government buys this and they should buy it from me. Well, guess what? Like, singing is one of those types of things where maybe the general that's just got promoted and is head of the ball or whatever, maybe he doesn't like your type of singing. You're never going to get in there. You're never going to sell to them because maybe he has a favorite singer or a favorite type of singer. Something. And so I think too many people are overly optimistic when it comes to what I would call like a smaller market. And so when I'm looking at, should you even be a government contractor? One of the questions I ask is, what's the size of your market? And so while there's probably not a single person on here who is a singer today, there may be, maybe that market is $1 million a year in the government. Well, guess what? That's probably going to be extremely competitive for that $1 million. But then we flip over to PM services, and PM services is a multi-billion dollar a year category that you can be in. So when you look at the size of the market, that often tells people, should you be spending your time here? Because again, like if I look at that and I am a singer and I see they're only spending $1 million a year, but if I look at the commercial market for singing and how many people have those types of, you know, singers for events and different things right. like that, weddings, whatever it may be, that market may be a $2 billion market. So even though you may be attracted to the government market because you're like, hey, this is a sure thing, they buy what I sell, it may not be the smartest business decision for you. And that's why we do need to look at the market size, who buys what you sell, how they're buying what you sell. I had a client a few months ago that was like, Mike, I do not understand why the government is not buying what we sell. We're a WOSB, we're 8A, we're this, that, and the other. And so we started doing a little deep dive for him. And I just said, hey, man, the one thing you don't have is how this agency's buying. He had like one agency he wanted to sell to. You're not SDVOSB. And like 40% of all the small business contracts are going SDVOSB in this particular agency. And when I look at the numbers, only like 3-5% are in that 8A WSB category. Like there's this really small percentage. And he's like, well, don't they have to spend so much? And I'm like, that's a topic for another podcast, right? But the point is, they're not buying the way you're set up. And you're really trying to put this, you know, square peg in a round hole, and you can't figure out why. And it's because you're doing the wrong thing. You're trying to sell the wrong thing to the wrong agency through the wrong means. And we've got to fix that or else you're never going to sell. So all you got to do is go get an SDVOSB teaming partner, and now we can go sell to that agency.
Right.
But you don't want to do that. You don't want to use partners. So guess what? You're likely never going to sell to them. And so we have to answer those questions. And I probably tell 10% of the people that call us, hey, we could probably find you some work, probably, but I'm going to advise you not to be in government because I think it's going to be easier to sell your services in the commercial market or products or whatever it is. And that would be one of them where I'd probably say that, you know, in the singing, hey, how much money do you need to make? And the number is $500,000 a year and they're only spending $1 million. And you're going to have to be the best singer. You're going to have every type of genre covered so that they can look at your website and go, ah, yeah, I can pick. The general's going to love this. The crowd is going to love that. And it's going to work. Otherwise, just go be in the commercial market. So I know that's probably not what people like to hear from the government, guys.
I mean,
it's the truth, you know?
Well, there's a lot of ways in. Yeah, it's like you could be a singer, like an agency, and have like a bunch of singers, or you could be a single singer, and maybe government is part of your overall business strategy, you know, and especially when you start and talk about those low dollar transactions, maybe it's like, it's not even about getting registered in all the places and all the government agencies that you potentially would like to do business with. And when I say government agencies, every state and local has a different registration process than SAM. You know, SAM's the big federal registration process. But like Michael, if I'm just a singer and I'm just like, I know that, hey, somebody put in the chat here too, like chapel services might be something that they could look into. And that's definitely like, if you like lived in an area where there's a lot of chapels and bases, you probably could call the chaplains at the bases, inquire about if they need singing services, but that probably wouldn't be your only customer that you're going to be reaching out to. You know, that's marketing, that's getting your name out there. And when I talk to folks, I say, like, think of this also as a piece of the pie. You know, it's like you got commercial, you got federal gov, you got state and local government potentially. I wanted to jump from micro to like a little bit larger up the scale here, because this is also, if somebody's saying, like, how do I win a contract if I sell staffing services? You know, and I know that a lot of staffing services go under big IDIQ contracts. And the question then you got to come back with them again is, are you going to be able to position yourself onto that specific large multi-year contract that the government is procuring those staffing services from? The question is not about like, how do you get your first government contract, but how can you get your first contract with anybody, especially if you're in pre-revenue?
Right.
Typically, the government is a hard place to start because especially at the higher levels, the higher the acquisition, the more that they're going to this purchasing vehicles where you have to really kind of get up at the next levels to be able to even have a ticket to, you know, be in the show of sorts.
I agree with that. And I think for a lot of people, part of their strategy when they're new in the game, whether they are a well-established commercial business or whether they're brand new in that pre-revenue stage that you're talking about there, a lot of people come out of the gate thinking prime. I want to be a prime. Right. I want to go win a contract. And when we talk to people, we usually say, look, you're probably not ready to prime unless you are very well established in the commercial market. You may not have the infrastructure. So how do I win my first contract? By finding a teaming partner or partners. It's one of the fastest ways because you can leverage their knowledge in the market. You can leverage their knowledge of the customer. You can leverage their past performance. And together, you can go and be a force to be reckoned with. And then there's so much less for you to learn. And I don't know why people just kind of look down on teaming when I always tell people, look, the teaming dollars are just as green as the prime dollars. You just don't have all the overhead. You don't have the responsibility of doing the entire RFP. You should contribute to the RFP process, but you don't have all of that. You don't have all of the oversight on the contract that they do. You don't have to worry near as much about funding it, because that's another thing that breaks a lot of brand new contractors is, like, I just got a client yesterday that said, hey, I've got to add 20 positions by the end of the month. 20 positions. And this is a company that only has about 35 employees today. So he's basically going to double the size of his company over the next 10 days. And my first question was, do you have the cash flow for that? Like, do we have the cash flow? Because you're going to wind up paying at least two, if not three or four paychecks for these people before you get your first check back from the government. So do we have the cash flow? And so if you're the prime, you're really concerned about the cash flow, whereas the sub, it's not that big of an issue because you're not the one putting 50 people on contract in a month. You're maybe putting five or whatever it may be. And so there's so many advantages to teaming with a company, even if they're similar in size to you, if they're already embedded at your agencies.
Yeah.
And so I really want to encourage people to look at that more and have a handful of teaming partners.
Yeah. And, you know, that may be your only option, really, because if you look at the way that the government buys, you used an example of like fruits and vegetables. I also had a client that was looking to sell fruits and vegetables. General SDVOSB had a farm and he was trying to get his fruits and vegetables in. But the reality is that the government has a lot of the big prime vendor contracts with companies like U.S. Food Service, Cisco, that actually just, they're these integrators, right? And they get all the suppliers together and there's just one contract with all of these items that they manage. You know, the government doesn't have to say, okay, I'm going to buy peaches from Michael. I'm going to buy apples from Sally. You know, they just go through these prime vendors and it just, you know, makes a lot more sense. But subcontracts actually is probably something that a lot of people aren't thinking of, like you just said, but it can be not only a better way in, but maybe your only way in.
And often faster. That's the other thing, because as a business, one of your biggest concerns is, are we bringing in cash and when, right? Not just, are we bringing in it today and then, oh, we're good for the whole year. We want to be bringing in cash on a daily basis, if possible. You know, we don't want to wait 6 months to a year. And so if you're looking at some of these contracts that are out there, there's stuff that could be awarded already where they're having trouble putting people on contract. Maybe you can fill in there on an active contract that's already being awarded, and now you can put some of your people on it. Or these other contracts that are getting ready to be awarded, and you can team with people and get a piece of that in the next month or two versus trying to wait a year to establish yourself in the market. But again, for some reason, I think too many people have just kind of looked down on the teaming as, well, you know, I want to be a prime contractor. Right. Well, someday you'll get there, but I have plenty of clients that have never primed a contract. I have one client right now. I wish I could tell you the numbers that this person is doing. They're doing multiple seven figures in revenue. And profit is through the roof in this company. And they have never won a prime contract. It's always been a sub. They're really good in their niche. They focus in their niche and they're dominating in their niche and they're making an incredible profit. And that's all from subcontracting. So,
yeah, they say the riches are in the niches.
The riches are in the niches, man. I saw a question, and I know we're not necessarily the Q&A yet, but I saw a question that kind of goes in with this about like, how do I find the teaming partners? Well, when you're doing your research on who buys what you sell, when you pull that data in SAM, if you've set up your SAM search correctly, you will also pull the vendors that are already selling. And so that list of vendors that are selling to your agencies is the perfect target for you to look at. And you may look and say, well, this one company is doing $100 million a year at the agency. Well, maybe I don't start there. Maybe I kind of go down the list and look for a company that's selling, you know, $5 to $10 million a year. And you just start going through the list. You could really start anywhere, but you look at that list and you figure out, hey, who in here would I benefit from working with? Maybe you look at the list and say, hey, I've noticed the agency also sells a lot of SDVOSB. So I'm just going to filter this by the vendors that are SDVOSB. And those are the ones I want to team with. But when you pull the data out of SAM, the data on who buys what you sell is connected to the data that has the vendors in it. And those vendors are ideal teaming partners because they're already selling.
And we have a couple of classes on Govology on that. Your partner, Joshua, did one. I did one last week and I showed people how they can kind of get the breakdown on like, hey, here's all the like the primes winning the contracts inside of your industry. And the cool thing about being able to see the data too is that when you get this list of like maybe 100 vendors that's selling inside of the industry, you'll know which ones actually are winning and getting the money. And then the other ones, because you could spend a lot of time talking to people that are not getting any revenue.
Right.
Or you can kind of just go and start to build relationships at the top.
That's a great point. I mean, it'll likely show a couple hundred vendors. And out of those couple hundred, there's a small group getting all the money.
Right.
And then there's all those other vendors that have got zeros by their names, or even worse, where they've had a contract and they've had it pulled and there's some minuses by their names.
The obligation.
And you'll see that in there and go, oh, I'm going to stay away from these guys. I'm going to focus on this list. And what I found a lot of times is also you can pull it up by state. So if you want to filter in your state to say, well, who's in my backyard? Now you're looking at that. And that's a great way to look at it. And so there's so many cool ways to pull that data in SAM.gov so that you can know who you should be talking to and who you shouldn't.
Yeah.
And you may also pull up a company and go, you know, that is our nemesis right there. We don't want to work with them.
Right.
Or, oh, that is my brother-in-law works at that company. We do want to work there. You know, there's little things like that that you'll get really quickly from just pulling that data.
Yeah. And in addition to the education, I know a lot of the procurement technical assistance centers out there quite savvy inside of market research and helping their clients out. So if you guys don't know what a PTAC is, look them up. Mike, wanted to kind of change gears a little bit because we've been talking about all the reasons how that question of how do I get my first contract and how long would it take to get it? There's a lot of it depends factors in there. And we could go on all day, probably some of these. But I wanted to actually start to talk about some pathways, some common pathways that people have used to win their first contract. Because, you know, I want to make two points. One, there's no one pathway. SAM registration is one, but there's a few other ones I want to kind of go over here. I'll put a little bullet list together, seven things. I'm sure there's more than these seven. I'm going to go through and read these seven here. And then also, like, I want you to just kind of jump in if you have an extra one or two, or if you want to kind of comment on some of these that I'm going to mention here, we could do that. But number one is like register and win. You know, that's like the whole dream, right? You get registered at SAM and then basically miraculously a contract shows up at your doorstep. There's actually a lot of people that think that that's the way it works. I had a lady at a conference say, I registered, but I didn't get a contract. Well, there's a lot more work sometimes that gets you have to do besides just registering. And so
I'll tack on to that one. Yeah. There's not just registering in SAM. A lot of times when you are selling to a specific agency, they often have their own little registry, like an internal system.
Right.
So you can, it's just you register as a vendor for that agency. And so in addition to registering at SAM, you can go to all these other agencies and ask them if they have interested vendor list. right. and go. Sometimes it's a simple email. Sometimes it's a form.
Yeah.
And you get registered and they're like, wow, you're the only guy that, you know, does piano tuning.
Right.
Okay, cool. We need a piano tuned. And there you are, you know, and you might just get awarded a contract simply from being registered. It's not going to create a ton of volume for you to just register and win, but it will create some wins.
So. Yeah, you brought up a good point there because just with the federal government, right, there's a lot of acquisition that goes through the Unison, I think it's Unison Marketplace. It's the reverse auction system. So if you guys don't know what that is, check it out. But also, like when I was working in procurement at a city agency, we had a small works roster for construction contractors.
Yep.
And it's like, if we had a specialty and you were registered and we looked to the list, literally you can register and win in some cases. But in other cases, it's a lot more detailed than that.
So you're at SAM, that's the whole federal market. Then you've got individual agencies. Then you've got the SLED market. And it even boils down to like not just the municipalities, but like let's say you're in St. Louis and you want to sell to Washington University. Like they may have an interested vendor list too.
Right.
So like looking at getting on all those things. So that registering where you need to be registered is probably the number one thing you need to do anyway, because when you go to, they go to award, they want to make sure you're in that list.
And, you know, sometimes I give this piece of advice, but like flip the script. And what I mean by that is that, okay, we can register at SAM because it's one single point of registration, but there's like 90,000 state and local agencies. So if you want to actually tell your sales team, I want to actually get as much out there into state and local as I can, does it benefit the sales team to go to every state and local agency and get registered? I don't think so, because here's the deal. You're probably going to get so much emails and they're going to be on so many irrelevant types of opportunities. You're going to like just stop looking at that email. What I suggest for people to do, go ahead and register to SAM because again, it's the central place for the federal government. But if you're looking to sell state and local, start to know who your ultimate, I like to call them the MVP, the most valuable player inside of that agency is that will actually influence the acquisition. Like maybe it's a department head or a program manager that you form a connection with. They open up the door to talk with you. You interview them, right? About like, hey, what's the challenges? What are you buying? Where are you buying it from? So now you have some information. But then a lot of times opportunities, if they're not already soliciting from in like on demand repeating acquisitions, that might turn into an opportunity for you. And they'll say, send me a proposal. So you haven't even registered yet. You're already sending a proposal to the program manager. And if they like what you're doing, they'll say, okay, well, that's going to be at this dollar level. And because it's at this dollar level, now we need to get you registered. So sometimes the process works in reverse, you know, and I think it's a much more efficient process than telling somebody, say, like, if you really want to get your products out there to all of the state and local, go and register with 90,000 of them. It's just, I think it's unrealistic, really.
Yeah.
And it's better to have a reach-in strategy to kind of have the demand first.
Well, and knowing who your buyers are, I mean, that's a big thing. Let's find out who the buyers are so that we're not wasting our time talking to people that are not buyers.
Right. The other thing I'll say about registration is to register properly. I had a client that I was working with, and she was already registered in SAM, but she didn't really have anything filled out on her SBA profile, which means that like that's where a lot of the contracting officer go to do market research. And because she never really filled out her SBA profile, nobody was really calling her up. I just simply helped her fix the data in her profile to have a nice capabilities narrative and keywords. And she got a call 2 weeks later from the Army Corps of Engineers because they were able to see her. And so not only registering, but registering properly is a tip there for you. The number three here I've got is be known, liked, and trusted and in demand. We talked about that earlier, but if you have something that the government wants, it's not going to take you long to make that sale because they'll come, sometimes they'll come to you. I've been in acquisitions where I've seen like, hey, the government wants to acquire this piece of property and this one person has it. So it's like, now we're trying to get this person into SAM to meet the regulations. And this person's like, well, I don't want to register in SAM, you know? So there's also that, but also like we talked about earlier, we see people that maybe they were working in government in a specific mission area. They're already in demand, right? And so it doesn't take them too long. So if I was talking to that person, it'd be a lot easier. It's just like, okay, let's get you registered and Sam to like meet the requirements and you're pretty much in. Because they already have the relationships developed with the people who know them, like them, trust them, and want them.
I think that's a good one. And you get to know who your buyers are. You start talking to these people, having conversations, introducing yourself. And whether it's a product or service, if you're one of the best people that are out there, then you're going to get known really quickly. The other thing that I would say is I think a lot of people downplay the importance of things like social media, podcast, all this kind of stuff. And this is really where people are going today. More people are gravitating to that type of stuff than ever before and at every level. And we have a lot of people that rely on brochures. They've got their capability statement. They've got a couple of product or service brochures and they've got a website. And they're like, well, why aren't we getting known? Like, you're not putting anything in the market. And so, you know, LinkedIn is an absolute must for government contractors. You need to be on LinkedIn. You need to be publishing stuff on LinkedIn about what you do so that people can see that stuff and realize, wow, they're really good at providing this. And so now they know you. As they watch your stuff, they become to like and trust you and they want to buy from you. And so I really believe that we've got to shift the market from this old school website, which it sounds kind of odd saying website is an old school thing, but this focus on website capability statement and brochures, like that's so much of the market on that. And people will spend tens of thousands of dollars, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars, even going to trade shows and things like that. And you can get sort of known by doing that. But at the end of the day, if there's nothing on the back end where you're continuing to communicate with people, then you've spent $10,000 on a 3-day event and then you have nothing on the back end. You have nothing. And so I'm going to spend 3 days at an event. I'm not only going to introduce people to me at the event, I want them to know that there's all this stuff on the back end. They can get connected and stay connected with me, because a lot of times they just come into your funnel and you've got to continually work with people. I know they say what, sometimes it takes 27, 28 touches before somebody even realizes and recognizes your brand. That doesn't happen over a 3-day event. It takes months sometimes. And so the back end piece is so big in my book because that's where they get to know, like, and trust you. And it's just a continuous thing versus just like the one shot or just the one phone call. Hey, Carol, I'm going to send you my capability statement. Awesome. What am I going to do with that? Yeah. I'm probably not going to download it or print it unless I think about it. And I'll probably never think about it. So.
And when you said LinkedIn, it got me also to thinking about not just only having a great profile. And I know Josh always in his webinar says, if you want a great profile, copy mine. So if you want to go look at Joshua Frank, take a look at his profile. But the other thing is that if you learn how to use the filters, and you could go probably Google or YouTube, like how to use LinkedIn filters, because there's free filters on there where you could say, let's go back to the singer example. If you know that chapel services might be somewhere where you would like to sing, you could probably go to, like, let's just say there was a Navy base in your area, and you could probably put that the name of that base inside of the LinkedIn as a company, or you could just put U.S. Navy or whatever. Now you can also put like a title for that person. You could put chaplain. If you know that's who you need to talk to, you'll probably find a whole list of chaplains, and all you could do is like message them on LinkedIn, say, hey, you know, I do singing. I'd love to connect and just do a 15-minute interview if you have some time. I'd love to figure out if there's a pathway for me. And it can be as easy as that.
Yeah, I mean, LinkedIn is just so powerful. And I was just on the phone this morning with Mark Amtower, just did his census for the government. And I don't remember how many hundreds of thousands of new people from government are on there, but it's crazy the amount of people that are in government. And you can find them all right there and connect with them.
Yeah. You can also scroll down on their profile, see what groups they're in LinkedIn. You can join those groups. One thing that a lot of people don't know that is like, even if somebody doesn't connect with you directly, right? And sometimes you can't send people a direct message. If you're in the same group with them, usually it'll allow you to do a direct message to them. So you can join the groups they're in. You can maybe even see some of the conferences that they go to. But I think that we covered it all. The only last point here that I was going to say about this too is just really, do you have your products or services located where the government shops? And we talked a little bit earlier about those higher level contract vehicles, for example, staffing services. And maybe it's like not even GS, it's like an agency specific contract that you've got a position on, because that's the first place the government goes to look to purchase that. But if you're doing products, you know, there's all kinds of places where the government might buy. You know, you might have a purchase card holder that goes across the street to Office Depot and buys a camera. If you sell cameras, you might not be able to get your cameras in the retail outlets of Office Depot, but you might be able to get it into Office Depot online. Or you may be able to get your product positioned on Amazon, which is actually really starting to build into a portal where sales are going. And a lot of people don't know this, but if you are a certified small business, Amazon even has a program where if you send them, you probably look at Amazon Supplier Diversity and you could probably read about it. But if you send them that certification that you've got, maybe if you're a minority business enterprise and you've got that paperwork, you send that to Amazon in addition to having your profile and your products there, which you can now sell to the world, not just the government, but they can also designate that you are a minority business enterprise on Amazon. So if anybody's doing shopping by socioeconomic categories, they could find you inside of that. And then you can also maybe put a link right to your profile page there. So it's like government does shop at Amazon. So
yeah, they shop everywhere.
Yeah. So I think we covered it all. It's right about the 45-minute mark here. So we'll wrap up. Michael, I'll just kind of give you like a few final words. Give me your Jerry Springer final thoughts.
The final thoughts. Yeah. I would say, you know, the biggest thing is get to know who your customers are, get to know how they buy your products or services, and then put your stuff there. You know, that is the number one thing, followed by number two being focus on some teaming partners. If you're trying to win your first contract, your teaming partners are going to be essential to that, not just for your first contract. They're going to be important over the course of time. As you go, use them as a stepping stone to win the first small thing and then a bigger thing and then a bigger thing. And so build those relationships, because again, everybody has their own relationships in the government and you all want to just work together to win stuff. So
thank you. And I think my final tip is just that know that there's more than one way in, right? So if you've gone and registered and basically nothing's happening, it's not that nothing is happening. It's just that you don't see what's happening, or maybe you're not in the right position or in the right place. There's many things that you can try. So go and try something different, and just don't sit there just kind of like waiting in that one spot. So there's a lot of ways that you can skin the cat. I don't even know where that saying came up with. It's kind of morbid, but it's kind of came to the top of my mind. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, we're going to wrap up. I just want to leave you guys with a few links here. So again, if you want to join us in Govology Nation, our private LinkedIn group, just go to govology.com/nation and hop on in, request access. Also, if you want to connect with myself or Michael on LinkedIn, I know Michael's always doing videos out there on good tips. So I would suggest that you follow Michael. Just probably look up Michael Lejeune and you'll find him pretty easily. And also, Michael's got a little link for folks that want access to some cool templates and everything that you guys got over there at federal-access.com/Govology. So if you guys want to check that out and see the free resources that Michael's got over there for you guys, is a thank you for being a listener here, and definitely suggest that you check it out. So with that, we'll conclude this episode. And one last thing, if you want to catch this episode or look for it, we're in multiple podcasting places, YouTube, Facebook, on Govology USA. And also, if you can't find us anywhere, always the go-to place is govology.com/issues, where you can find all of our past episodes. And you can also submit your own issue for a topic to be discussed on the next show. So with that, I'll say thank you. Thank you, Michael. And thank you, everyone who's joined us today. Now let's go to Q&A for all the folks that joined into our live studio audience. So let's pull up the chat here, see what we got.
I think we've answered a lot of it as we went today.
Okay.
So if anybody has any additional questions, but I think we hit most of them as we went.
Yeah, guys, this is your time. If you have a question, if you want to throw us out an example like, hey, I do this, what do you think? go ahead and do that. Because there's, and that's the other thing that I say, Mike, is that everybody's got a little bit of a journey, different journey to go on, depending upon what they do and what they sell.
Not only that, but you know, your point about the different paths, you just got to keep trying stuff. I mean, that's the biggest thing, is just keep trying stuff and don't just wait around for it. I see too many people that like they try one thing and then they wait, and they'll wait a week or two, and then they'll try something and they'll wait a week or two. Yeah. And like for me, my focus is, how am I putting opportunities in my pipeline? Like, how are we putting money in the pipeline? And we've got to be doing that on a regular basis, because without that, you know, you're not going to make any money. So we've got to be putting things in the pipeline and not just registering places and that kind of stuff. So
absolutely. We have a couple of questions coming in here,
yeah.
Or like a sample scenarios. First one, it looks like it says, I'm working on registering for my GSA contract number and waiting for Seaport Next Gen open enrollment. What other contract vehicles can I register for?
So I will take that one first. For that person, what I would say is, it goes back to the first thing I always say, who buys what you sell, and then how do they buy? Because just because you can get on Seaport doesn't mean you should be on Seaport. So you want to look at the agencies that you want to sell to, and then look at how they're buying. You can look through that in SAM and go, oh, I need to be on this vehicle and that vehicle. There's a bunch of really popular ones out there. And if you have the right services that fit, that's great. But a lot of times you need to look at that agency. And so if you can't figure out that when you're looking at the SAM data, you can do something as simple as call and talk to the contracting officer, talk yes. to the small business yeah. office, and say, hey, what contracting vehicles are important for your agency? Because they may say something that is not even on the radar. It's an internal thing or whatever. Or like I said, the interested vendor list. And they're like, look, if you want to sell to us, you better be on this list or have this contract vehicle. And they'll be able to tell you that stuff. So I highly recommend talking to your agencies, talking to the small business office, and just asking them what's the yeah. most important thing for you to be on.
I'm glad you said that, because it's exactly what I was thinking, is that, and here's another tip, is that like a lot of people want to call the contracting officer to sell to them, but they're not the ones that really are sitting there generating the demand, right? So it's like, it's the PMs and the different department heads and the end users who actually, they need this thing for their work. They're going to request it. So if you wanted to just kind of pitch a product or something, it's better to pitch to those guys, because the contracting officer is like, well, nobody's requested this item from me. So, but what you said is perfect thing to ask, because the contracting officers and the small business representatives out there are perfect people to ask fact-finding questions. The question of like Michael said, like what vehicle do you purchase off of? If you purchase off of a vehicle, and yeah. if you don't, where do you purchase, so I can know to go and get there?
Yeah.
Short yeah. story, when I was at the VA, I used to get people in IT call me sometime, and they would say, hey, I've got this GSA contract for IT services. And I'm like, well, the VA, and I don't know what they do at this day and age. You know, maybe they do buy there now, but back when I was working at the VA, we didn't buy off of that IT service contract with GSA. We bought off of NASA SOUP contract, which is a yep. completely different contract vehicle that hardly anybody really knew about, you know, but that's where you needed to go position. So I think that, you know, that's what would be the thing, to just get that yep. fact finding and ask the questions.
Well, and not only that, I'll just tack on this one thing, and then we got to wrap up here in a little bit. And we got a bunch of questions, so we'll move on. But GSA is one of the biggest traps that I see. A lot of people believe I've got to be on GSA. And it is worth it for a lot of people, but I probably only recommend GSA to about 25 to maybe 30% of our clients. And so again, it's based on who they're trying to sell to. And so before you go down a long path like GSA and think that's my golden ticket, make sure you've done the research, you've talked to those agencies, and you know they buy on that, or else you may waste a year trying to get GSA and then realize, oh, they don't buy it. I just wasted a year yeah. and thousands of dollars from a consultant when they don't buy that way. And so it's just something to check out before you go down the wrong path, because any of these vehicles, a lot of times there's a lot of paperwork involved and a lot of time. And so I just recommend they check that stuff out. So.
And it's usually not just a year wasted. It's usually three. The year wasted is getting the contract, then 2 years trying to sell under that contract only to not get sales and get kicked off because you didn't hit your minimum sales requirements by GSA.
Yeah.
And more than 50% of the small businesses that actually get a GSA contract get kicked off because typically they jump in there because somebody called them up. It's like, how would you like a 5-year no bid contract with the government? I know you got a hard stop. So we're going to wrap this up. What I'd like to do, I know we still have some comments and questions there, but if you still want to get those questions answered and we didn't get to you, please join us at Govology Nation. That's our LinkedIn group. Post them there. That's what they're there for. It's for you guys to have a forum to talk to us. Ask us questions, throw scenarios. We've got over 1,000 members there in that network. A lot of experts and great people who could also chime in on some things or maybe pick something up that, you know, Mike and I might not even be thinking of. So use that group. And so again, govology.com/nation is how you get there. And with that, Mike, I know you got to go. So we'll wrap it up and we'll see you guys next month.
Thanks, everybody. All right. See you next time.
Take care.
Bye-bye.